So this is from the letter of Romans, chapter 1, reading from verse 16. Romans 1, reading from verse 16. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal men and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions. For their women exchanged natural relations for those that are contrary to nature, and the men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another, men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in themselves the due penalty for their error. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Though they know God's decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them but give approval to those who practice them. Over to Philip.
Well, thank you very much, Alfie. And if you could please keep that passage open in front of you, and you should find, hopefully, on one side a little outline that might help you as we work our way through this passage. Well, we've been answering in this series some of the really big questions of life. And our question today is this: is God anti-gay? Now, as I say that, I realise that this is a very personal issue for many. It's a very sensitive issue. Maybe you're here today and you're someone who's experienced same-sex attraction, or maybe you're in a same-sex relationship. Well, if so, we're really pleased that you're here with us today. It's personal for many. It's personal for my family as well. A member of my family wrestled with this issue of same-sex attraction for many years, and none of us knew about it, but eventually the marriage broke down, and she ended up leaving her husband and two children and started a same-sex relationship. So it is personal for my family as well. And that makes it a very emotive issue, doesn't it, for us? But it's not just personal and emotive. It is also something that's very public. It's a very public issue, isn't it, in our culture today. It seems to be that it is the presenting issue of our age. It's now precisely 2 years and I think 3 days since the same-sex marriage legislation came in. And our culture has made it one of the big issues, haven't they, of the day. Our culture even has moved very fast, so that now this seems to be, in many quarters, the consensus. And the debate has moved on from same-sex marriage to now gender issues, to transgender issues. And it's not just that it's a personal issue and a public issue, but it's also, it seems, that there is an image issue here. An image issue for religious people, for Christianity. That's what people say often, don't they? They say things like this. Here's Elton John. Religion promotes the hatred and spite against gays. From my point of view, I would ban religion completely. Organised religion doesn't seem to work. It turns people into really hateful lemmings, and it's not really compassionate. Seems that Christianity has an image issue. And all of that makes it very difficult to talk about, and very difficult to talk about with a clear head. A confession to make at the outset: I didn't really want to give this talk. And yet, I think it's important for us to examine this because it is an important issue. It's a very important issue because it is one of the questions of our age. It's also important because Christians and churches are increasingly confused by this issue. And it's important because it impacts on people's lives day to day. So is God anti-gay? Well, I like to suggest that the answer is no. No, he isn't. Here's where we're going to be going over the next 20 minutes as we try to look at the answer in more depth. God's design for relationships has been undone in all kinds of ways, including in the area of sex. And in a sense, therefore, none of us are straight. God challenges, though, he challenges us. He challenges both homophobia and homosexuality. But as I say that, let me issue a plea at the outset, and it is this. You may hear some things that I'm about to say that you disagree with, or that our culture disagrees with. But don't let sexuality destroy your objectivity. Let me say that again. Don't let sexuality destroy your objectivity. Check out the evidence of Jesus Christ before you reach any firm conclusions. And I think that when we do that, we will discover the most loving man who has ever lived. Someone we can trust, even when he and the Bible maybe say things that we're not sure about. More on that later. Well, we need to, in order to answer this question then, in order to see why it is that God isn't anti-gay, we need to look at the Bible itself. We need to look at those words that are printed on the sheet for you that were read out for us. We need to say what the Bible actually says, because our conviction is that when we do that, we hear God speaking. You see, it's the Bible, it's not a dusty book that is dead and out of date and out of touch. It is God speaking today about the matters of today. Because God knows. He knows all about relationships and sex because he invented them. Our first point then is this. God's design. God's design. The passage read out is full of the language of creation. I don't know that you noticed that as it was being read out by Alfie. Verse 20, creation of the world. Verse 20 again, what has been made. Verse 23, birds, animals, creeping things, reptiles. Verse 25, creature, creator. You see, we're being taken right back to the beginning, to the beginning of time, to the beginning of the Bible, to our origins, to Genesis chapter 2. In fact, I've put down the reference there just in case you want to look it up for yourself later. But the thing is this. In Genesis, what we see is God's design. God made us. He made the world and he made our relationships with that. God, you see, he is relational. And above everything else, he made us to have a relationship with him. A perfect relationship then at the outset between God and humans. And also perfect relationships with one another. That's how he made things. That was his design. And yet we read just a few verses here in Romans and we see that we've thrown all of that back in God's face. God's design undone, secondly then. God's design undone. What we do is we reject the designer. As Alistair Campbell put it, we don't do God. And that is something that is universally true of us in and of ourselves. Take a look with me at the passage and let me read from verse 18 for us. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. Do you see what it's saying? The evidence is there. The information is there. It's there in creation. If you like, our world is a show and tell. It is God's show and tell. Sometimes kids do this. I don't know whether you've ever seen this or had this experience. Kids come and show you what they've made. And you're supposed to say, that's brilliant. They've done some drawing or something and you can't quite tell what it is. But nevertheless, you look at it and you're supposed to say, that's brilliant. Well, even more so with God. We look at our world and we're supposed to say, that is brilliant. So our planet, and we see Tim Peake's amazing pictures from the International Space Station. Or that little octopus that they found off the coast of Hawaii that looks like Casper the Friendly Ghost. How he did these things, how he made these things, is secondary. But that he did it is everything. And we're supposed to look at it, and we're supposed to see it, and see God. God at work, his eternal power and divine nature at work. But the thing is, the problem is, verse 23, we've done an exchange. Take a look at verse 23. And exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images. Normally, an exchange is a good thing, isn't it? So you take your old banger of a car and you take it to the garage or the showroom and you part exchange it for a new shiny new car. Or you've got maybe something that you bought in the shops, maybe it's some clothing or something, and you've had some feedback from someone saying, not sure about the colour, not sure about that. You take it back to the shops and you exchange it for the right thing. Well, here there is a swap and exchange. But what we end up with is much, much worse. We exchange the Creator God for created things. Verse 25 says that we exchange the truth of God for a lie. Shockingly, we trade God in. And we all do that. We all trade God in for something. We don't trade him in for nothing. We trade him in for something. And that, I think, is why this is called worship, according to verse 25. We all worship something. We swap the designer for something that he has designed. Now, it may be that those things are good things. But that doesn't change the facts, does it? We take a good thing and we make it a God thing. And so what that means is it's not just transactional. It is relational. We don't give God his due place. We don't thank him. It's as if someone has taken a thank you letter. And of course, when you give someone a gift, like a birthday present or a Christmas present, it's a right and good thing to send a thank you letter. But here it's as if that thank you letter has been sent deliberately to the wrong address. It's thanks, but no thanks, God. I don't want you. I don't need you. Thank you very much. Instead, we want something or someone else. And we've all done that in different ways. And so as a result, this is what happens. God gives us over to our own design. In his anger, he gives us what we want. He gives us over to our own design. Now that might initially sound like a good thing, that we get what we want. But actually, it isn't. It is God's judgment. And it says it here in our passage three times. Verse 24, therefore God gave them up. Verse 26, for this reason God gave them up. Verse 28, and since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up. And now, as a result, relationships are messed up in all kinds of different ways. Verse 29 to 31 gives us a horrific list. Envy, murder, all kinds of things, gossip. It is all relational. All of these things are relational. And it includes everything. It includes what I do, what I say, what I think. It includes what I do at work, what I do at home, what I do everywhere. and even in the bedroom. It includes sex, you see. Because sex, it is the body language of relationships, of marriage. God made it, and he made it to be good. Our culture talks about gay and straight. Well, in a sense, when it comes to sex, nobody is straight. All sexual relationships are messed up. We're all failures, every one of us. And so here is one thing that it's important to say. Here's one thing this passage is not saying. It is not saying that same-sex desires and practice are particularly singled out for us in this passage. We only need to look at verse 24, which talks about heterosexual desires that are wrong, but also that massive list at the end in verses 29 and 30. All kinds of wrong desires. Sometimes we want something else that someone's got. Envy. Sometimes we want it so badly that we want to kill, in our heads at least. We want also relationships that God hasn't designed us for. We move from maybe from one sexual partner to another in our culture. But the passage is clear, though, when it comes to same-sex relationships. It is clear about that as well. Same-sex relationships, same-sex practice, goes against God's design. It's our design and not his. And there's no getting round that, I think, from what it says in our passage. In fact, I have to be honest, it would be a lot easier for us if it did get around it in our current climate. But the Bible seems to be clear here. God's design is one man and one woman, publicly, exclusively, united to one another in a marriage relationship, in a marriage union, and that is the proper place God's designed for sex. And we go against that design. And what do? We swap him out. And that is very damaging, I think, for us when we do that. Let me explain. Because I think this is what we do in all kinds of areas of life. And it is damaging. So when we swap God for something else, it's not a very good swap. Because what we swap God for becomes the thing instead that we care most about, that we fear most, that we think most about, that we love most. Maybe we swap God for money. Well, if that's the case, we'll always worry about losing our job or whether our bonus is big enough. We'll feel insecure about our work. If we swap God for success, we'll always worry about whether we're successful enough, maybe compared to the next person. Or if we swap God for beauty, we'll always wonder, am I beautiful enough? Or am I ugly? And if we swap God for a relationship or sex, we'll always worry if he or she is the right person and whether we're happy enough or whether suddenly the bubble is going to burst and it's all going to tumble down. And we'll feel insecure about our relationships. And so what happens is that we then weigh down those relationships with all kinds of expectations, but they were never designed from the outset to bear. They were never designed to bear that kind of weight. Only the designer, only God is. Only he can bear that weight. Now, as I say that, I know that our culture has many objections to that. And there are three in particular that I want us to think about over the next few minutes. And the first is there on your sheet if you look down, and it is this. Jesus doesn't mention it. Sometimes people say, Jesus doesn't seem to preach a sermon about same-sex relationships and say that they're wrong. Elton John thinks that Jesus would be in favour of same-sex marriage if he were alive today. In fact, he even goes so far as to say this. I think Jesus was a compassionate, super intelligent gay man who understood human problems. Well, if you look at what Jesus says in the gospel accounts, he affirms God's design. He affirms the Genesis design. He explicitly refers back to Genesis and also talks about sexual immorality. And so he didn't actually need to say any more because it was uncontroversial. It was clear what he meant. That's our first objection then. Secondly, though, I think people then respond maybe with another objection, which is much more common, and it is this. It's homophobic. It's just unloving, judgmental, bigoted. Well, let me respond to that by saying this. There is no place for homophobia. Romans is clear that same-sex sex isn't singled out. Let me say it again. There is no place for homophobia. Christians are to love their neighbour, whether they would call themselves gay or not. And the verses here are clear. Verses 29 and 30 say that slander and maliciousness are wrong. There is no place for harsh words to someone who would call themselves gay. In fact, Jesus, he is the complete opposite. He is always gentle and kind. He's honest as well, even when he encounters people with messy sexual histories. If we have been homophobic, I think we need to say sorry if that's the case. But it's not bigoted either. It doesn't mean that Christians are judging people in same-sex relationships if they disagree with them. It's very common, I think, in our day and age to say that Christians are intolerant if they disagree with same-sex marriage. Actually, I think that that might be intolerant. Because it means that what we're actually saying is anyone who disagrees with us is by definition intolerant. In fact, even the gay rights activist Peter Tatchell understands this. He recently got into trouble and got no platform by the National Union of Students because he was standing up for free speech, even if he didn't agree with what they were saying. It's not bigoted. But one last objection, thirdly, though. And this is quite a hard one, I think, emotionally too. It's my identity. I was born gay. I am gay. It's my right, therefore. Sometimes people read this passage and they look at the verses, particularly verses 26 and 27, and they say, what this passage is actually saying is that it's okay to be engaged in gay sex if we're naturally gay. And it is wrong to do so only if we're not naturally gay. It's okay as long as we're born gay. But I hope, well, from what we've seen, that that doesn't quite fit with what the passage is saying. It doesn't fit with this creator-creature language. Rather, when it uses the word nature or natural relations, it's talking about God's nature, the creation that he made. God made us, you see. He made relationships as well. And so what I think that means is our identity is much more fundamental than our sexuality. Because we are creatures made wonderfully in God's image. The biology in this area isn't fully known, but our sexuality isn't the same as our identity. So heterosexuality isn't our identity. Homosexuality isn't our identity. Straight isn't our identity. Gay isn't our identity. Single isn't our identity. Married is not our identity. And yet it is the case that being a human, being made in God's image, that is our fundamental identity. And that is still true, even though we have rejected the designer for our own design. But you see, we now live in a world because of that where God has given us over to what we want to do in all kinds of ways, including in the area of sex. But that isn't the end of the story. Because thirdly, God's design redeemed. There is hope. Take a look at verse 16. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes. The gospel, God's message, is the power of God for salvation for everyone who believes. In the gospel, Jesus rescues us. He rescues us from his anger and from a damaging life of living how we want to right now. In Jesus, there is forgiveness. There is forgiveness for all kinds of sins, but fundamentally, for what really constitutes sin here in this passage, and it is rejecting God. What does that mean for identity then? Well, it means that we can have a restored relationship with God, with the designer, with our maker. We can be a child of God. And that is real. That is a real identity. Jesus offers us a change, a fresh start. Even if we wouldn't call ourselves Christians, he offers us that. And so, our final plea then is this. You see what this is saying? Don't let sexuality destroy your objectivity. Look at Jesus and what he offers. A fresh start. Look at the evidence for Jesus before you reach any final conclusions. And when we do that, I think we meet the most loving man who ever lived, the one who claimed to be God on earth and backed it up by dying and rising, who offers us a fresh start. And this life with Jesus is wonderful. Worshipping our Creator, worshipping him, is truly liberating. Instead of insecurity and wondering if they're the one, real joy and security with the one who made us. The one who knows best because he made us. I know there are many Christians who are working here in the city who are attracted to the same sex. But yet they have concluded that Jesus is who he claimed to be and is trustworthy. And so instead they've chosen to make him their identity, not their sexuality. And they've started to live this new life. Well, thank you for listening. Now, I'm conscious that what we've covered here is a big topic and that we can't say everything in a short talk like this. We can't tackle it in one lunchtime. Maybe some of these issues are very personal for you. If so, we'd love to talk more. We're very happy for people to come and disagree and chat further. If so, please do come and speak to me or Alfie or Claire if you've got questions. Or come again next week as we carry on thinking about some of these big questions. Or alternatively, here, if you look down at the sheet, you'll see here that there on the back, there is a course called Christianity Explored. And that is a way of coming and asking your questions. And many people here have done that course, so feel free to come on that if you'd like to. But also, there are some Gospels, John's Gospels at the back, and it's possible, if you'd like to take one of those away and maybe read it for yourself. Take it away as our gift. Well, thanks again, and hopefully see you again.